Hello and welcome to the YYC Soccer Podcast. My name is Jason Kmet and my co-host is Scott Strasser. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Jason. How are you today?
It's going okay. It's a Thursday night when we're recording this, and a bit of anticipation for the week ahead. Going to see Cavalry back in action. But as we stated in our previous episodes, even though we're in the wintertime, there doesn't seem to be any lack of content for the Calgary soccer scene right now.
No, not at all. I think we compiled a pretty impressive list of topics with a decent range for this week's episode. I'm excited to get into those discussions.
But if you are a new listener to the podcast, Scott, what is the YYC Soccer Podcast all about?
Our podcast focuses on soccer in Calgary, and we talk about it at the amateur, collegiate, and professional levels. We talk about the teams and the players from the city's soccer community, from grassroots and amateur leagues up to the university and professional level, with some interviews thrown in as well.
Yeah, and this week we're going to cover a lot of things that fill that mandate. We're going to, from cavalry-related things to local minor soccer.
Yeah. We've got another interview with Maya Jones. This will be her second appearance on our podcast. Maya recently joined the San Diego Wave in the NWSL after she was selected in the league's draft last month. We also will talk about some of Cavalry's latest signing announcements. And then there's an update about Kaylee Hunter, who was with Canada's U17 girls national team at the CONCACAF Championships. And then there's also Canada's U20 men's roster announcement. So there's a player from Calgary on that team. And then we even have some, like you said, local minor soccer stories. We're going to talk about an attempted mutiny, the board of directors for the Airdrieann District Soccer Association, which fell a bit short last week. And then we also have a major minor soccer tournament taking place in Calgary this weekend that we're going to promote.
Yeah, we definitely are running the gamut this week. So let's start off with the Maya Jones interview. So as you mentioned, we interviewed Maya back, I think it was in June of last year, and she was playing for Foothills UWS, and a lot of stuff's happened to her between then and now, wouldn't you say?
Oh, she had a phenomenal final season of university soccer with the University of Memphis Tigers in the NCAA, and she followed that up by being drafted, very deservingly so, by the San Diego Wave. So she's embarking on her professional soccer career. I think we've talked about her joining San Diego a little bit in the last episode, but we were able to catch up with her. She interviewed from San Diego, I believe. Yeah, good to catch up and see how the first few days or weeks of her preseason with her new professional colleagues has gone.
And actually, Scott, I didn't share this with you earlier, but when we were having a little bit of tech difficulties in connecting the call, we ended up doing a FaceTime video. And when we were doing the FaceTime video, Maya was actually doing the podcast outside with palm trees in the background. It was like exactly what you would expect someone that's living in San Diego to do.
Yeah. So I think we'll start with that interview and then we'll dive into those other topics. But here's our interview with Maya Jones from this week. We would like to welcome back Maya Jones to the podcast. Longtime listeners may recall, Maya was on our 12th episode way back in June of 2023. In the several months since we last spoke, she finished her 2023 outdoor season with Calgary Foothills UWS. Then she went back to the University of Memphis for her final season of eligibility in the NCAA. But most recently, she was drafted by the San Diego Wave in the NWSL and signed a contract with the team. She's currently training with the Wave as they begin their preseason preparations. Welcome back to the podcast, Maya.
Thanks for having me, guys.
How does it feel to be starting your professional career in soccer?
It's definitely a dream come true. I mean, this is something that I've wanted to do my whole life, and this is something I've aspired to do since I was a little kid. So I think just being able to play on such a good team for my first professional contract is pretty surreal.
So what steps have you taken, Maya, to prepare both physically and mentally for the demands of professional soccer compared to maybe university or UWS?
Yeah, I mean, in the off season, I just worked really hard to maintain my fitness and to get a lot of touches on the ball. I think Honestly, my preparation was pretty similar to something I would do leading up to my college season. You don't really want to peak heading into preseason because that can cause burnout, especially with the length of the season. So I just kept it pretty consistent for what's worked for me so far in my career. And now everything is kind of just managed through the coaches and the technical staff and the physical staff. So now it's them kind of managing me rather than it being all on my responsibility to manage myself, I guess.
How has training gone so far? Is it what you expected? Is there been any surprises that you've encountered so far?
It's honestly been really good. I think it was what I expected. I expected it to be a pretty big jump from college soccer. It's a lot faster. It's a lot more physical. It's a lot more tactical. But I feel like I'm adjusting well. I feel like my teammates very receptive to me being a rookie and obviously me giving me the feedback I need to develop in this environment. So it's been really good. It's obviously really challenging to develop, or not to develop, it's really challenging to adapt. But I feel like I'm doing a good job so far.
Yeah. Next question from us, Maya. I know you've probably gotten this question quite a bit from friends and family already, but we got to ask it. What has it been like to be on the same team as Alex Morgan, right? A U.S. Legend of the game. What has that been like to maybe train with her or talk to her? Have you done that much yet?
Yeah, I mean, she's been at all the training sessions. She's really an amazing player. I think what I expected is what I'm getting. Like, she's holds the standard super high at training sessions. She expects a lot from everybody. And she's just a really good leader on the team. I think that's really her role, is to be a leader and to make sure this environment stays as high as possible. So she's really amazing. It's been really cool.
Are there any specific areas of your game that you're focusing on trying to improve during this training camp?
Obviously, my decision-making on the ball is a big one in a new environment. I think in college, you can kind of get away with being very reactionary. But in professional soccer, you have to be more proactive in your decisions because of how fast it is. So the biggest thing for me is just knowing when to dribble, when to pass. It sounds easy, I think, being the type of player I am, and that's just like kind of my role, is to go 1v1. It's something I need to learn to do, and I think watching a lot of film will do that, and just like speaking to coaches as well. So that's the biggest.
Shifting gears a little bit, Maya, we couldn't help but notice that there have been more professional opportunities for Calgarians recently. Obviously yourself, but your teammate Grace Storti, Talia White, Kaylee Box, other examples of players who are making that leap to the professional game. What would you attribute this recent surge of local players making that step up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just people finally have opportunities. I think Calgary's always really produced good players, but now it's these players who have a pathway to professional soccer. So I think that's kind of the biggest difference. All these girls that have gone pro, like you said recently, they're all really amazing players and they deserve to be playing at the highest level. So I think it's really nice that they have opportunities and that we have opportunities as young women to pursue our goals and our dreams.
Yeah, definitely.
Maya, what are your expectations for yourself in regards to your contribution to the team this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think for myself, I just want to grow and really just play a role on the team that is impactful, whether that is on the field, whether that's off the field, just being a good teammate and learning from the people around me. And if I do get that opportunity to step on the field and play, I want to do my job as best as I can. I'm a winger. I'm meant to create chances, assists, goals. So the goal is to impact the field or impact the game in field. If not on the field, then being a really good teammate off the field and learning.
Yeah, last question for me, Maya. I know, I think we asked you this last time we had you on the podcast. The chance of getting called up to the national team. At the time, you were still with Foothills UWS. You were starring for the University of Memphis. But I wonder if you feel like being on the San Diego Wave, being a professional player, will increase your chances of maybe getting that call up in the near future?
Yeah, I mean, It definitely should increase my chances, but I think at the end of the day, it's just up to me and my game. And if I'm able to perform at the professional level, I don't doubt that I'll get that opportunity. To be called up to the full national team, I think I've done a good job in college. Obviously, a lot of the players on that full national team are professional players. So now that I've made that step in my career, I think I've definitely boosted my chances, but it's really just the beginning, and I have to perform at this level as well to prove my worth to the full national.
An important first step.
Last question, Maya, is there anything else you want to add, want to mention? Is there anyone in the Calgary soccer community you want to say hello to, acknowledge? Is there anything else basically you want to send out to the Calgary soccer world?
Yeah, I think definitely there's a lot of people that have impacted me in Calgary. I would say Lee Tucker is a big one. He obviously was with me with Foothills. Then there's a lot of other coaches like Troy Flannery, who was with me back in the day, who's really impacted my career. And even more recently, Luis, who's also with Foothills, he helped me a lot too. So I think it's really hard to attribute it to one person. It's really been a collective job of a lot of coaches that have helped me, but those three in particular, I think, have definitely impacted my career for sure.
Well, I think that's a great place to end the interview off, Maya. But thank you so much for putting the time aside to appear on our podcast a second time. We really appreciate your answers to our questions.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me, guys.
Yeah, we wish you the best of luck as the NWSL 2024 season gets underway.
Thank you.
And we'll be following along with great interest. So, all the best.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you again to Maya Jones for doing the interview. Great to catch up with her and see how her career is going. We're very excited to see how 2024 will go for her.
Mm-hmm. So let's move over to Cavalry, and their first match in CONCACAF is going to be next week. And since our last podcast, they've added in a couple more players. So let's talk about the two new signings. The first one is 21-year-old attacking midfielder, and his name is Lucas Diaz, and he's on loan from Sporting Lisbon in Portugal.
Yeah, I think if anyone listened last week, I mentioned that Cavalry's preliminary squad for their upcoming CONCACAF series against Orlando City seemed to be missing a winger, and it was cool to see just a few days after we recorded that they have signed another winger. So I didn't know much about Lucas Diaz, I confess, before, but he is 21. He's Canadian born. He's from Toronto, but he has been in Portugal for quite a while with Sporting Lisbon. Tommy Wealdon Jr. described him in a press release as a clever, attack-minded player that wants to make things happen in the opponent's half. And he said, "We look forward to him wearing our crest and providing another attacking piece to our squad." That kind of makes me think of Gauthier Ntigny. So I wonder if Diaz could be a replacement for that kind of offensive-minded attacking player.
You know, that would seem to make sense. And like you said, I think that is something that didn't seem to be on the roster. So maybe that is the hope that he's going to be able to fill that role. He hasn't played, as far as I know, with the main Sporting team. He's played for the youth clubs and the B side. He has spent time with the Canada U23 setup, so he has had some opportunity to play at a pretty high level. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure he's going to get some opportunities to play. So
I think Sporting Lisbon has a really good reputation for producing talent, right? And based on his transfer mark page, it looks like he's been there since 2016 when he was playing with the U15 squad, and he's worked his way up to Sporting's reserves. So I imagine, you know, him coming back to Canada to play in the CPL will be a good way for him to get some more professional experience under his belt. Cavalry always releases like a little highlight reel video of their latest signings, and I always like watching those, and they always show the players kind of like either scoring goals or setting up plays or making nice tackles. So it's hard to really judge the player based on that, you know, 1 minute clip. But as usual, when Cavalry releases a video like this, it always is, you know, a glimpse of what kind of player they are. So seems like he's exactly as Tommy Wheeldon Jr. described, wants to get forward, wants to get on the ball and make things happen in the opponent's half. So excited to see how he fares, I predict, on the wings.
And the other signing that the Cavs announced was another loan announcement, and this is Jack Barrett. He's a goalkeeper, and he's with Everton, and he's been loaned out to the Cavs this season.
Yeah, I think Tommy Wheeldon Jr., as a lifelong Everton fan, would have been very excited about that connection. Barrett is 21. He's 6'3", and he seems to be a lifelong Evertonian. He's been with the club since he was 9. He's been on the U18 and U21 squads, as well as, I believe, with Everton reserves. So good pedigree, absolutely. And, you know, he's pretty young coming in, but yeah, great for Cavalry to make that kind of signing.
He's young. He's 21 for a keeper. That's still really young. So maybe we'll get a chance to see a little bit of him this year behind Carducci. But I think now at least we know what the plan is for the backup keeper going forward for this year.
Yeah, because we talked about goalkeepers lately. We talked about Nico Jansopoulos training with the team, if that could mean anything. And then we also talked about some of the young goalkeepers who are with the club for the Orlando series. But no, it seems like we have a little more clarity in that regard now.
The last Cavalry mention we were going to have in this podcast was about a former Cav, Ethan Beckford. I think we mentioned in the last episode he'd been transferred to a club in the UK, but we didn't know which one. The club is Havant and Waterlooville, and I don't know much about them. They have an interesting name. I think they're in about the sixth level of English soccer, but yeah, kind of a cool name. I'm assuming you don't know much about Havant and Waterlooville, do you, Scott?
I do not, no. I just pulled up their Wikipedia, and it looks like they're playing in National League, or last year they were playing in National League South and finished 10th. So presumably they're still in that division. That would be the sixth tier of English football, but their stadium is a 5,300 capacity ground. So I imagine this is at the very least semi-professional. So probably a good spot for Beckford to land, find his scoring boots again. He obviously had a great time in League One Ontario, but wasn't able to prosper at the CPL level. So yeah, this is one we can keep an eye on and see how Beckford does with his new club in England.
For sure. Let's move on to the Canadian men's U20 roster announcement. So that announcement was this week, and there is one player with a Calgary connection. That's Christian Grieco-Taylor. Scott, do you want to make any comments about his background and sort of where he's at?
Yeah, he is a member of the Whitecaps. He was a member of the Whitecaps FC MLS Academy, and he started with Foothills. I confess I didn't really know much about him before hearing this. I know he has a brother, I think it's his brother, James Grieco-Taylor, who played with the University of Calgary Dinos. So it seems like a soccer family, but no, I do know that he's in Vancouver.
I'm kind of in the same boat. I don't have a lot of previous knowledge, but I did look up some of his stats from last year, and he did play MLS Next Pro level, and he did get, I think, 21 games in and had 12 starts. So he did put in some minutes at that level. So that's pretty good for someone that age. So pretty much the only Calgary connection on this squad, and I think that CONCACAF Championships is starting up, I think, this weekend, like very soon anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and another Calgary connection and national team story, as we've mentioned a few times, Kaylee Hunter, who was on the women's U17 national team that just played at the CONCACAF Championships. I believe that tournament was down in Mexico. She had a great tournament. Canada ultimately finished, was it third or fourth?
It was third because that last game they played was the third place match.
Okay, yes, of course. So they beat Haiti in the third place match. And Kaylee Hunter had a hat trick in that game. She played the full 90. Canada won 4-1. One of her goals was a screamer. So that was a great way to cap off the tournament for her. She played the rest of the games too, I believe. We mentioned her first half performance for Puerto Rico in our last episode. But after that, she did start against Panama. She scored a goal. came off in the 73rd minute. Canada won 5-1. And then against the U.S., she started, played the first half. Unfortunately, that was a tough outing for Canada. We lost 5-0. And then she played, I presume this would have been the semifinal. She played against the host Mexico, started, played 73 minutes. Canada lost 2-1.
Yeah, so I think it's a bit of a disappointing tournament from a Canadian standpoint, but I think that from Kaylee's standpoint, yeah, that final game definitely finished the tournament on a real personal high, at least. That one goal, I think it's the third goal she scored. It fantastic goal. I think we'll be, as we've kind of mentioned before, we're going to be probably talking about her regularly on the podcast, even though she's moved up to Vancouver now. I think she seems like she's a pretty regular member of Canada's youth setups.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
We have a couple other local stories that are kind of interesting and worth mentioning, I think. We are really running the full, right from the pros all the way down to the grassroots here. So let's talk about this this Airdrie story and about the mutiny or attempted mutiny of the board of the Airdrie Soccer Association. Scott, I think you know a bit more about this than me. So you want to give everyone the update and fill us in?
Yeah, so there was, I guess you would call it an attempted mutiny at the Airdrie and District Soccer Association. So what happened was there was a town hall in November, and a lot of parents, I guess, aired a lot of grievances at that meeting. They were upset with just things at the club. I think if you've spent time in minor soccer, you probably have your own stories about kind of, you know, club politics and things like that. So a lot of it was, it seemed to be of the same kind of your typical parent grievances with the club, but there was a lot of discontent among parents of Airdrie's youth soccer players. So after that that town hall meeting, they, I guess, felt that the club didn't really respond to their complaints adequately, and they triggered a non-confidence vote by signing a petition that generated 10% of member signatures. So I believe that amounted to more than 120 signatures, which meant that the club had to hold a special board meeting. At that meeting, which was earlier this week, there was a non-confidence vote. A majority of the 266 attendees at this meeting did vote in favor of removing the board members, but they needed a 75% majority. So they fell short of that threshold, which means that the board will remain intact for now. So I just thought this was a really interesting story. It's different from what we usually talk about on our podcast, but it was quite interesting to learn that, you know, the politics of youth soccer are alive and well. I remember that from my own time playing for Calgary clubs growing up.
Yeah, and I think the thing about this that strikes me as kind of interesting is that I think in every club there's probably some parents that have their grievances and they're not happy with the way things are going, but this got organized and they were able to kick this pretty far down the road all the way to getting to a vote. So yeah, I think this is probably something which I don't think it's over. There's probably more to come on this story in the future, I would think.
No, one of the organizers of that petition campaign pretty much said as much. They have their AGM coming up, the Airdrie and District Soccer Association, in the spring. So he basically said that, you know, we lost the battle, but not the war. We're going to look at our options come that AGM, see if there's another motion we can bring forward or some way that we can continue this conversation, because they're not pleased, obviously.
For sure.
In other local soccer news, we have a big tournament coming up.
Yeah, this I wasn't really too aware of this tournament, but you brought it to my attention, Scott. Really a big youth tournament. Why don't you go over it a little bit and explain it a little bit more? Because I think you have a bit more awareness of the details than I do.
Yeah, it's called the All-State Family Day Classic. It's an annual indoor tournament in Calgary. It's going to take place February 16th to 19th, so basically Friday to Monday. It's going to be a pretty huge tournament. It's for teams from age U10 all the way up to U19. Last year's tournament saw 184 teams, 32 divisions, and over 3,500 players. But got an email about it today, and it's going to be even bigger this time around. They're going to have more than 4,000 players, and I think it was more than 200 teams. So those games will be going on all weekend.
Probably a pretty good way to spend the long weekend. Doesn't really matter what the weather's going to be like. It'll be indoors and get a chance to play in a tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that I think kids get a little bit more than a long weekend for February, right? Because there's teachers convention. Yeah. Like February is usually like the mid-February long weekend for kids is usually 4 or 5 days, not just three. So
I can confirm that. Yeah. It's Thursday and Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So it's 5 days off for the kids.
That's awesome. So yeah, this tournament, I believe it's 7v7 boardless. So different from, it's not like the boarded soccer that I played growing up. It's that outdoor style 7v7. I mean, it should be a good weekend for, you know, hundreds, if not a couple thousand Calgary soccer players.
So I think this is probably a good place to wrap it up for this week. So thanks again for listening to the WYYC Soccer Podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast using all the usual podcasting platforms. You can head over to our website at yycsoccer.com, where there's more information about how to subscribe or to leave a question or comment. You can follow us on Twitter at yycsoccer403. Thanks for listening.